Hello and welcome everybody. Today we're going to be talking about Ramadan in the UAE and the Oscars.
We're going to be talking about the movies we've seen recently and we're going to be diving into some Kate Middleton Photoshop controversy.
Cannot wait. This is Culture Bites from the National News. I'm Ina Safai.
And I'm Farah Andrews.
And it's Ramadan.
Ramadan Kareem.
Ramadan Kareem.
How are you doing?
I'm okay, so I'm fasting.
I am not.
It's okay. I'm having weird cravings.
Do you want to talk about food? Because is that going to make you more hungry? How are you doing?
I think I can talk about it.
Okay.
So, like, I'm fasting this Ramadan.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are fasting and thinking of Gaza.
Yeah.
I think it's hard not to. So it's definitely been pushing me, like, in this kind of like spiritual kind of space that I'm in at the moment, just to like have a bit of thought and remembrance for people who aren't as fortunate as us.
Yeah.
Which is, it's been humbling, and I think I really needed it.
Yesterday you described it as meditative.
It is meditative.
I might have added a syllable in there, sorry.
Meditative. No, it is meditative. I can't say it now. Maybe that just happens.
A time to meditate.
It's a time to meditate. It is. I think when you take away something as basic as food and water, you do have to remember why you're doing it.
Yeah.
So it has been really good for me. But yeah, my weird cravings. I always crave the same thing every Ramadan, and it's custard.
Which is, so for the rest of the year, the other 11 months.
I don't eat custard.
How often are we having custard?
Hardly ever. I haven't got a sweet tooth. Like, I'm not one of those people that's like, oh yeah, sweeties. I'm not interested generally in dessert, sweets. But for some reason, whenever I fast, I'm like, sweet, fatty, creamy.
I guess and it's nostalgic. It's very
warm,
homely.
Cold.
Oh, I honestly don't think you could pay me to eat cold custard right now.
What? You don't like a hot crumble with a cold custard?
Absolutely not.
What?
It would be a hot custard.
With a hot crumble.
With a hot crumble or ice cream.
Or ice cream. Okay.
Or cream.
Yeah. Or cream. Okay. No, I think cream. I'm not a huge fan of ice cream. See, I don't have a massive sweet tooth.
I love ice cream.
I know. I just don't have a sweet tooth. But because it's Ramadan, last night I have to say me and my husband, we did sit and eat a whole tub of ice cream.
That's just basically frozen custard.
Frozen custard.
Some places in America.
Frozen custard. I'm trying my best as well to be really healthy because I think that's something that we often all forget in Ramadan, which is like traditionally, it's not just about gorging yourself in darkness.
It is
about having a bit more like self-control
in
general.
Yeah, and like the kind of restraint.
And the restraint of it is meant to continue, not gorge. It's hard. Eight hours
of just straight eating isn't the one.
But iftar and suhoors are fun.
They are. I went to a suhoor last night.
Oh, so tell me about your
suhoor. Would you like me to tell you about my suhoor last night? It was quite fancy.
Wait, who put on your suhoor last night?
Oh, the brand Miu Miu. It was lovely. It was in a cafe in Jumeirah in Dubai. Miu Miu have taken over the whole of their like terrace for the month, which I didn't realize. I thought it was a one night activation, but no, people can go down and enjoy the Miu Miu Ramadan menu. And it's got like very beautiful, like deep purple cushions and interiors. There's a fire pit. Last night there was a really, 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 really wonderful Lebanese musician whose name I cannot remember. I'm so sorry. That would have been perfect for right now. Farah, come on, make notes. The menu's been curated by a chef who runs Paper Fig in Sharjah, which is a really nice cafe. And she's made... do you remember at Davos when the Emirati hot chocolate went viral?
Yes, I
met
her.
We all remember. She's made an Emirati hot chocolate froyo for Ramadan exclusively for Miu Miu. I tried it last night. It was amazing.
It's got beautiful like hints of cardamom.
Yeah.
I love that.
Very fragrant.
And
the menu was wonderful. It was a treat last night. It was way after my bedtime.
Tell me more about the food. Was it Arabic?
Yeah. Kind of fusion. So there was a pumpkin and pomegranate soup to start. And then like baby gem salad and then there was steak and there was prawns and the dessert was the froyo. The menu was great, really nice, and not huge portions, like nice nibbles, so people can I recommend going down, go and try it. It's in Culture in Jumeirah, Culture House in Jumeirah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's something I'll do during this Ramadan.
Have you mainly had iftar at home?
I've had iftar at home. I mean, it's been only a few days.
Yeah, we're only
Iftar at any friends' houses. Just saying.
Just saying.
There's a few people on that list that just should have got an invite. I have decided to have an iftar at mine.
You have?
Which you're invited to.
I will be attending.
Yes. I'm trying to dare people who aren't Muslim to fast.
If I'm coming to an iftar, I'm going to fast. I didn't fast last night because I went to a suhoor, so I had to go home and have dinner. I wasn't going to wait until 10 p.m.
Yeah.
That's too much.
That's
like European summer Ramadan.
That's a European summer Ramadan, which I have to say I was not very good at. Mm. But we're moving on. We're living in the UAE now.
It's a lovely month in the UAE. There is a lot that happens.
Yeah, there's the hours all change.
We become a bit more nocturnal. Mm-hmm.
Everyone
does, but I'm not very good at being nocturnal because I do mostly like being asleep.
We know this about you. I am loving it because the schools start a bit later, which means that I actually get 8 to 9 hours sleep now, because usually the schools start at like 7:30 and at the moment they're starting at 9:00. So that's
why I've been noticing lots of children in the community in the morning. And we go for our dog walk, there's like been like lots of children out playing, which has been really nice.
Because they just don't have to be at school.
That's lovely.
At the crack of dawn.
For children.
Yeah, it's great for children and their parents, who often have to wake up before the children and get the breakfast on the table and brush your hair, brush your teeth. Ada, brush your hair, brush your teeth. Ada. I'm hoping she's listening.
Isn't it? She'll hear that. She's already going to brush her teeth right now.
Yeah, right now. But there's other things as well happening. So it's not just iftars and suhoors, which are all over the place and everyone's working different hours, which is really lovely.
We've noticed that the Sharjah Museum of Islamic Civilization is offering free entry for the month of Ramadan, which is so nice. So people can go and get like a dose of culture.
Yeah, so if you are new to the country and you're new to like Islamic culture, I think that's a good place to start.
I think even if you're not new to it, it's a good place to go and read and enjoy a bit of cultural heritage.
Yep.
There's also a very key part of Ramadan.
Yeah.
Is the daily canon.
Daily canon.
You'll know a lot about it.
I know a lot about
you've been working on some.
So one of my guys who went down yesterday said it was very humbling. He was standing 5 feet away from a cannon when it went off.
Ooh.
Boof.
Big sounds.
Boof. Big sounds. But yeah, to symbolize like the, you know, the iftar time. Yeah. I think it's really lovely to have these kind of traditions. I think it's very specific to the UAE. I don't know if I can remember it from when my time living in the other parts of the Middle East.
When I was a wee nipper, when I was a child living in Dubai, I remember that as a very key part of Ramadan, because it was you heard it, you're like, oh, it's iftar.
Oh, that is nice. A big part for me during Ramadan, and this will be for everyone else. So you know in England how when it's Christmas, everyone buys the TV guide.
Right, yeah.
Because Christmas is when all the good TV comes.
Yep.
And everyone's like, right. And I remember even as a child, I'd go to my grandma's house. We'd open up the Radio Times?
Yeah.
We'd open up the Radio Times and we'd circle the films that we wanted to watch.
Yeah, you're planning. You've got like a TV schedule, basically.
Well, we would plan our TV schedule. This shows my age. But here in the Middle East, it's that for a month over Ramadan.
Right. It is a big month for TV.
It's huge. So there's like big Arabic shows, but also like soap operas. They all land during Ramadan. There's like prank shows, there's comedies, and it will often be a big part of like the community culture during Ramadan is that you have iftar and then you sit down and you watch your favorite TV show.
I love that.
It's so nice.
Because streaming's changed the way we watch TV, so people aren't watching things at the same time. But during Ramadan, you can still have that kind of communal, everyone's watching it on the same evening, kind of. Yeah, I love that. And my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, is that every year there is the kind of like old favorites, nostalgic hits, but then a crop of new shows that everyone's just very invested in.
There'll be lots of different like old shows. I mean, the biggest one, I think everyone, like anyone who's Middle Eastern will know, was Bab el Hara.
Okay.
Especially from my region, from like the Levante ways. Levant, I don't know, Jordan, Syria.
Tell us about it.
So Bab el Hara, it's like a period drama. A period drama set in old Damascus.
Okay.
And everyone spoke in like kind of like period drama Syrian accents.
Right.
And it's like a really fun show. It's quite like There's drama, there's humor, there's love, there's lust, there's everything.
Right.
It's like a bit of an EastEnders, but set in Old Town Damascus.
I'm picturing like EastEnders mixed with like a Jane Austen vibe, Old Town Damascus.
Yes.
Love. I'm invested.
Yes.
I've never watched it.
No, it's one to watch. I don't know if it's ever been translated. But if it hasn't, it needs to be. Someone out there translate Barbarhara. Yeah. It was like a big favorite. I don't think it's running at the moment though. It's ended. My producers are all like shaking their head. It was a long time ago. I'm just showing my age.
Everyone's missed their chances.
I think you can watch it all on YouTube if you have an inkling with Arabic.
I've come unstuck.
So moving on.
It's been a big week.
Right, I'm going to lean on you heavily now because the Oscars, did you wake up?
I actually didn't.
What?
So this is the first year since I've worked at the National, and probably the first year, because I've always worked in entertainment news, it's the first year in a long time that I haven't been up at the crack of dawn to do the Oscars. The Academy Awards, biggest night, end of awards season, biggest night in Hollywood, all wraps up there. And no, so this year I did not actually do any of the coverage. We had the team on it. I actually had the day off, so I enjoyed it.
Ah,
I was an audience member.
An audience member. So it was a big show.
Huge.
Lots and lots going on. Big winners.
Oppenheimer. Is it Oppenheimer or Oppenheimer? I think I say Oppenheimer, but
it's probably Oppenheimer.
We don't always get it right.
We've learned this. I don't speak English very well.
Oppenheimer, big night. They won 7 awards, which is, I read, the most awards one film has won since Slumdog Millionaire won 8 in 2009.
Wow.
So,
and it's quite funny because at the time of like the Barbie, Barbieheimer, everyone was kind of leaning more towards Barbie, but actually Oppenheimer's come in and swept it all up.
So I have opinions about that.
Go for it.
I loved Barbie. I thought it was a great film. I don't think it was a cultural turning point, but I thought it was a phenomenal film. But I also don't think that when it was being made, it was a film that anybody making it thought was going to be an Oscars heavyweight. I think they thought they were making a summer classic. Mm. I think they thought they were making a film that was going to have very, very broad universal appeal. I think they thought they were making something phenomenal, which they did. Mm. But I don't think they thought they were making an Oscar contender.
Yeah.
And I think the only reason we have had that conversation about it as an Oscars contender is because of the marketing. It came out on the same day as Oppenheimer, which obviously
That's
classic awards fodder.
Christopher Nolan was always going to be there.
So I don't really think, this is entirely my opinion, I don't think it really was the biggest snub. It would have been lovely to see Greta. Like the film was phenomenal.
Mm.
And like the direction was great, the attention to detail, the world, it was completely immersive. But did I think Margot Robbie was the best actress in a film in 2023?
No.
And that's okay. And it's not unfeminist to say that.
It's fine to say that because Emma Stone, who I think she did get Best Actress.
Yeah.
She was in Poor Things. And Poor Things has really been labelled like almost cult status from now.
Yeah. I haven't actually watched it yet. Have you? Your husband has.
Yeah, my husband has. He loved it. He said it was great. I mean, from what I've heard, it's weird.
Yeah. I've heard very polarizing. People either loved it or hated it, I think.
Yeah.
It's on Disney Plus.
Oh.
So we can watch it here now. It didn't come out in cinemas here because it is quite risque. So if you are going to watch it, know that it's maybe not a Ramadan film. But it's...
Maybe I'll wait until after Ramadan.
Yeah. Wait until you get back. I definitely do want to watch it. And I was thrilled for Emma Stone because I'm a big Emma Stone fan.
I think she's great. She's just got such a lovely sense of humor and like a way about her.
And her speech when she won was very earnest. She looked a little bit overwhelmed, a bit like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. She was wearing Louis Vuitton and her dress split.
I know. I saw all the memes online.
But she handled it with so much grace and humor.
Oh, could you imagine though, collecting your award and your dress, you have a wardrobe malfunction.
I know.
I think that would be the worst thing. Like you would just feel so discombobulated by something so basic.
I liked the moment though. I thought there was like a real moment of female solidarity, because Charlize Theron was on stage with her, and I think Emily Blunt, I might have got that. But definitely Charlize Theron were kind of like at her back, like, oh my gosh, let's help you. I thought that was like a very nice, girls got each other back. I like
girls
it.
Girls got her back.
And Emma's speech when she accepted the award and she thanked all her family and her little girl, who she said has made their lives Technicolor. And I thought to myself, I'm quite invested in celebrity, and I completely forgot that she has a child.
She has a child. I didn't know this. I'm looking at you really stunned.
She has a little girl. Three.
3-year old. Three.
So that is proof that you can have
it all.
Well, you can have major, major success and be a household name, be a huge celebrity, but still live quite privately.
Yes.
Because I do think that kind of fame is a choice, but that's a TED talk for another day. And so, yeah, she has a...
I'll be subscribing to that TED talk.
Please do. I will start writing it. TED, get in touch. You can live privately. Not everything
has to be out there in the open.
No.
We're talking about out there in the open. Some people made a real statement.
Yes.
With what they wore on the red carpet.
Let's start with Artists for Ceasefire.
Yes.
Which was great.
Well done.
We saw a lot of people wearing Artists for Ceasefire pins. Do you want to run some names?
Well, yeah, I'm going to run some big names. Billie Eilish.
Big.
Big.
Winner on the
Mark
night.
Mark Ruffalo. Oh, did she win as well?
Yeah, she won for Barbie.
Oh.
For the soundtrack.
Mark Ruffalo, Rami Youssef, all wore the Artists for Ceasefire pins.
Yeah.
Which I think is like, it's just so reassuring as well. I think everybody's feeling a bit low, and it's just nice to know that there are voices being amplified.
Yeah,
when they need to be,
and kind of having those moments on. As we said, it was the last show in award season, so those very public displays of solidarity is great.
Yes,
Mark Ruffalo has been a very consistent voice of support. Billie Eilish
knew.
I think she might have signed the letter early on, but knew with her red carpet statements.
There was another red carpet statement.
Please.
Because Margot.
Oh!
Margot Robbie didn't wear pink.
I come to you with my Margot Robbie thesis. Are you ready?
So, yeah, tell me. So she's been wearing pink because of Barbie.
So she's had a very immersive Barbie wardrobe tour.
Loved it.
She has basically dressed as Barbie since like April. And her team have been phenomenal. They have referenced very specific Barbies with her looks. Mm. And I think everyone kind of thought, right, Oscars, this is kind of the end of the Barbie press tour. This film came out last summer. Mm-hmm. It's been going on and on. And I think we're kind of coming, we've come to the end. So I think everyone was very excited about what was Margot going to wear? What was Barbie going to wear to the Oscars? Because this was Barbie's chance to go to the Oscars, right?
Yes.
She surprised everyone. She wore very neutral black Versace. Her hair was very pared back. It was quite like beachy waves. It was nothing dramatic at all, really. It was quite a step back. So some people were like, okay, I'm a bit underwhelmed. What am I seeing here? However, I love it for this reason.
Twist and turns. They're coming to you. Where are they coming from now?
Throughout the whole press tour, she's obviously been with America Ferrera, one of her co-stars. And America Ferrera, she plays the human in Barbie. And she has worn a lot of black and grey and quite neutral colours on the in the press tour. And so it's kind of like they swapped. America was the nominee on the night. She was nominated for Best Supporting Actress, but she did not win. And she turned up in Versace as well. They were both in Versace, but full Barbie pink sequins. It was her Barbie moment. She was Barbie on the night, and I loved it. Oh. I thought that is like so symbolic of like Margot isn't Barbie. Barbie is all the different
people,
elements of the film, which really was the message of the film. I loved it.
Yes.
And the other thing I really liked as another person's interpretation of it is that was kind of like, it was almost like that was like Barbie's, I don't want to say funeral, but like the end. Like Margot was like, right, this is my statement. We're closing it off. Mm-hmm, we're done.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Stop expecting me to dress like Barbie now. I'm Margot Robbie.
I wonder if there's going to be a Barbie too, though. Props.
would probably be like brats.
And they did have Ken was on stage as well, Ryan Gosling. He gave a whole performance as Ken.
It's so funny.
Which I think we don't even need to talk about. Just go online, search it, Ryan Gosling, you know, playing Ken at the Oscars.
It's funny. 3:30. Just give yourself 3:30 of just pure joy. He gets on stage, he literally laughs at himself.
I think he does laugh at himself. I think there was at one point, did it pan to his wife?
It was his sister.
It was his sister.
He starts singing in the audience behind Margot, we're first name terms, who cannot stop laughing. He's just behind her, taking himself as Ken very, very seriously, takes his hat off, pops it on his sister's head, goes up on stage, sees Mark Ronson, who wrote the song, has the time of his life. He's with all his other Kens on stage dancing. They're all they're in hysterics for the whole thing.
Lovely.
No one is taking it seriously. Slash appears. What? It was great. It was very good-natured, very, very funny, very self-aware.
Lovely.
No notes.
No notes needed. Watch it. Okay.
Oh, there's one other outfit I want to talk about though.
If we may. Go
Rami Youssef.
So Rami Youssef, yes. He wore, describe it to me, because it was like a long jacket.
He wore a thobe with a Zenga jacket.
That's what it was.
What a combination.
Representing his Middle Eastern roots.
Yeah. And so I've got a quote here. I'm going to talk. Let me put the word in his mouth. The interesting thing is that the Oscars were on the first night of Ramadan. Whenever I go to the mosque during Ramadan, I'm always wearing a thobe. And then I thought, what would it look like? What would I look like dressed up in a thobe with a really nice Zenga jacket? So I started speaking to the team. The thobe was one that he got made for his wedding. It was custom. He wore it with a sheet jacket. I like the look. I do know that our producers did not.
Our Egyptian producers, like, no.
So that wasn't a vibe.
She wasn't a vibe. She was like, why was he wearing it?
It was head to toe black. I thought he looked very, very smart. And I do like, yeah, he was right. It was the first night of Ramadan.
Why not?
What you would wear for Ramadan.
Where what you'd wear
but
for Ramadan.
But wear it with Zenga.
I do love Arab clothing. Like,
yeah.
I think I've actually decided that this summer when I go back to London, I've got a couple of weddings. I'm just going to wear abayas.
Yeah, you said that last week. I love that.
I'll send you some photos.
Chic.
Chic. Okay, so let's move on. So I'm going to convince you of something, right?
You've got a tough job.
Yeah. You know what's coming up, don't you? Because we spoke about this like when we were talking about what we were going to speak about in this podcast.
We do some planning.
And in the planning, I said I went to go and see Dune 2. And someone...
I stopped listening. Listen, it's not my genre.
I know it's not on brand for Farah, but I'm going to try and do some like...
I don't even think it's a brand thing. It just has gone over my head. I am not... But okay, try and get me invested.
Okay, so do you like any sci-fi?
Yes.
What sci-fi do you like?
Star Wars.
Okay, so it's very similar to Star
Wars. I know.
Wars.
When I've heard descriptions of it, it sounds like Star Wars.
So then you're like, why bother?
Yeah.
I've already got Star Wars.
Chalamet Star Wars. That's all I do like Zendaya.
Zendaya's
if there's
great.
An entrance, it's Zendaya for me.
Okay, fine. And she, unfortunately, in the first like film of the trilogy, I think it's going to be a trilogy.
It's probably going to be more.
She comes in quite late, so probably don't watch the first one.
Don't go to that. So obviously, there are things about it that I can appreciate. Shot here.
Shot in Abu Dhabi.
There's a lot of Abu Dhabi input.
Big Abu Dhabi input. Lots of sand. Great. Beautiful.
That doesn't mean I have to like it.
You don't have to like it. But I
tell me why you think I should.
I think you should like it because the cinematography is stunning, beautiful, out of this world. I saw Dune 2. I'm not going to say, it's the most amazing film I've ever seen. I'm going to see it again. I'm not going to see it again. It was good to see it in the IMAX.
The National gave it 5 stars, which I remember. I mean, I don't want to call out my team because they do a phenomenal job, but I was like, 5? Is it perfect?
I don't think it's perfect, no. I think it goes on for too long.
I think every film, and also,
I went to go see something at like, it was 9 o'clock.
It's stressing me out.
So by the time I got home, it was past midnight.
I mean, right now you aren't selling it. Right now you're telling me don't go. So what you're saying is I need to like, what I should have done is on Saturday when it was raining, gone to the cinema at like midday.
Midday, yeah. Mm. Gone and seen it. And like it was, so, well, no, probably not have left your house though. That's no,
that
not
was
advisable.
Dangerous.
That was actually
there is
really
a
dangerous.
Cinema that's sort of walking distance to our house.
Oh.
It's a long walk, but it's walkish.
I could walk to the cinema near mine. Yeah. But I can't because there's no pedestrian.
I don't want to show off, but there's pedestrian crossings in Dubai.
Oh, Dubai, honestly. Oh, all Dubai people. So what I really like is like, there's kind of like Arabic kind of references. Right?
Yeah, you were talking about this yesterday. This interests me.
So the main character is kind of like, is Timothy, and he's come to like kind of bring together people to stop them warring over a natural resource, oil.
Is it the spice? Is that the resource?
That's the resource. Oil.
Right.
Spice.
But and people use spice for everything.
Pretty much. Right. It's like really, really valuable.
This is, again, like, so Star Wars is about trade. So this is a film about trade. And
yeah, and there's goodies and there's baddies. And it's kind of like all intertwined. And you start realizing that everyone's kind of a bit intertwined, much like Star Wars, I'm Your Father.
Which was also shot here.
Maybe I'm not selling it. Maybe I should just give up.
Don't. Keep going.
But then I really liked, so in the Arabic translations at the bottom of the cinema screen,
right, okay,
there was like, Lisan al-Ghaib is what's given to Timothy, which is loosely translates as like the tongue of the forgotten.
Uh-huh.
Or like it could also be Gharib. We don't know where this person, I don't actually know who wrote Dune, but I'm assuming they're not Arabic. But they've taken references from Arabic culture.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like your eyes are like darting at me.
I'm listening. This is like, you've got me. This is the most I've been invested. Tell me about the subtitles. I'm thinking, should this be a story that we write?
I think it probably should be a story that you don't write, because actually in the subtitles, they write it the way it's said, and that is an Arabic word.
Okay.
So it's not like, you know, if you were to write like Cassandra, like, hi, my name is Cassandra. In the Arabic subtitles, it'd be Cassandra. But when they're saying it in English, it makes more sense in the subtitles in Arabic. So you should write a piece about it.
Thank you. Right, I'll commission that.
Yeah, commission that if you don't mind.
So I asked Eddie, my boyfriend, he's very into, he liked Dune 1 a lot. And the other day I asked him to just like, I was like, I don't get it, basically. Yeah. Tell me why I should watch it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've read our review. But I also know that I do decide I don't want to watch things. And that's what my brain does. And there is no changing it.
I feel like, yeah, if it's not your bag, it's not your bag. I'm kind of shocked that Star Wars is even your bag.
Yeah, I think I started watching that when I was quite young. There was probably some people that I wanted to like, show off to, and then I got into it and I was there and was involved enough, and then I was like, oh yeah, I watched Star Wars, and
yeah, I like football,
young Farah. Oh. And then I was like, actually no, this is quite good. I didn't have my full stubborn brain block on yet. But when Eddie was describing it to me, I stopped listening to his explanation.
No.
And I thought, well, if I can't listen to 3 minutes of him describing it to me, I can't listen to 3 hours of
I would say that the cinematography is like, at one point there's like almost like a gladiator fighting scene.
Okay.
And everything goes monochrome.
Oh.
Everything on screen goes monochrome. Everything goes black and white. I was absolutely terrified of Austin Butler's character.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen something on the screen that scared me. Well, maybe it's because I've stopped watching horror films a long time ago, but he was really scary.
Oh, right. Well, then now that I know I'm going to be scared, I can't go. Okay, you ended your campaign.
I failed.
Yeah. So that's
done.
Really.
That's done.
I'm glad that you enjoyed it, though. I'm really glad.
I really enjoyed it.
And I really hope that when the third film comes out, you also really enjoyed that. Enjoy in the future, not past tense. And maybe we'll watch it one day, because I understand there's big worms and you have to do like walk sideways on sand. That's what I understand about this film.
It's true, you do have to walk sideways on sand.
I'm probably not going to watch it.
You're probably not going to watch it.
Let's
just move on. So Man is away this week.
He is.
So we're not going to do a Man About Town. We're going to talk about something that's been going around the town.
Yes. We're going to talk about something that we can't not talk about.
Which is... the Kate Middleton photo.
Is it culture I would say yes. It's a moment of cultural significance.
Yeah. I think, Kate, well, if you don't know about this, there's been a photo that has come out of Kate Middleton, who hasn't been seen in public for a while because she's been sick.
She has been sick.
And there's a photo that came out, her and her three children, and the internet blew up when a couple of news agencies retracted the photo from their kind of like distribution. They retracted the photo because they said that it was clearly altered.
Let's go back. We last saw the Princess of Wales, Kate Middleton, at Christmas.
Was it at Christmas?
Yeah. Royal at...
I've seen so many Twitter timelines now.
So is...
Oh no, I think you're right. It was at Christmas, yeah.
And at the beginning of the year, the royal family said that she had had surgery, abdominal surgery. She was going to be in hospital for 2 weeks, but she would not be back in the public eye until April. So they have announced something and they have said, and it's now, they said until Easter. Easter's at the end of this month. So no one was expecting to see her for the first kind of third of the year. That's what they said. It was very vague. The statement, no one knows what her surgery was, but they know she was in hospital for 2 weeks. That's it. That's all anyone knows. They're the only real facts in this story. It's her health though. I don't think she has to tell everyone everything.
No, that's true. If you're sick.
You're sick. And she had abdominal surgery. I don't think she has, I don't think that is, and at the moment they sort of did announce it. They kind of got ahead of it. They were just very, very vague. And then there's now in the last few weeks, people are kind of like, where is she? And TMZ got a photo of her in the car with her mum that was a pap shot. The British royals and their relationship with media in the UK is it's a relationship. So the British royals give and the British press knows when to step back. Mm-hmm. That's a very rough,
clear line
and very vague way of describing it, but that's basically how it works, right? Mm-hmm. You've been there.
Yeah.
So the British press was never going to publish those paparazzi shots that TMZ got, and they were run internationally. They were run by like Page Six and other publications, primarily in the US. Mm. And she does not look like her classic put together Kate Middleton self in that photo. But what do we know about her? We know that she's not been very well. We know that she's laying low. So that's all we know. And then about a week later, after those photographs came out that were different to the way we're used to seeing Kate Middleton, that kind of didn't help any of the kind of speculation, where is she? William pulled out of a funeral because of personal reasons. And so they keep on giving these very vague statements.
It's not working well for them, is it?
And then the family on Mother's Day shared a photograph of Kate with their three children, George, Charlotte, and Louis. It's a cute photo. Everyone's very smiley. She's sitting down in the middle and the children are surrounding her. Like at first glance, yeah, it's a classic British royal family photo, fine.
Yeah.
And then people started to notice that there definitely had been some Photoshop and there are discrepancies in the photo.
Yeah, we all started noticing them. And I think the National, we've got like a kind of...
There's a really good story of one of our picture editors has kind of gone and like dissected the photo and kind of explained.
One of our picture editors, we were sat in an editorial meeting and Charlotte said, you know, this is so normal.
Yeah.
You would always alter a photo if you're trying to get three children to look into camera.
With this photo, that's honestly what I think. I don't think that there's anything rogue or sketchy to do with this photo.
Yeah.
I think they did, getting three children to smile is impossible at the same time. And we know that Louis is quite cheeky. The thing about the editing is just basically like, why have they not got a better picture editor? why is the person
apparently
doing...
Apparently it's Kate it's that not. Did it.
Like, come on. Are we meant to buy that? Are we meant to buy Kate Middleton's notes apology like every celebrity that went up? It's very good that she apologized and she has said, like other amateur photographers dabble with Photoshop. I personally, again, this is my opinion, do not buy that the Princess of Wales sits at home dabbling with Photoshop. They have teams. That's what I think there.
Big teams.
They have big teams.
Big teams.
And if they have trimmed their team down so much that she has to do her own Photoshop, that's interesting.
It's an interesting idea. I'm like, I suppose I just love a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Like, don't, like, you know, just ask me, are one of the Beatles dead? Yes. Like, loads of them have died and they're all like, you know, I don't know, like all the conspiracy theories. Do you not know about this?
Conspiracy theory?
That Paul McCartney was replaced.
Oh, hello. Okay.
Do you not know this one?
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah. That Justin Trudeau is not Justin Trudeau. I don't know, like all these conspiracy theories.
Avril Lavigne.
Oh yeah, she's a vampire.
Yeah.
She doesn't die.
That's my favourite.
Like, I just love all the conspiracy theories. Like, I live for them. So, I won't go as far as flat earthing, but I do love...
She acknowledges that the earth is probably round.
I acknowledge that.
Probably.
But I do love a conspiracy theory. And I do think that, like, with Kate Middleton, with this whole thing, it's just, like, reignited, like, you know, a flame, an old flame that I held for the royal family, which is conspiracy theories.
I love the memes.
Memes are great.
Pop culture's response is always just so perfect. I love it. On the nose. Tap, tap. I also love, mainly the memes is really wonderful. Have you read that some people are speculating that is not actually her, it's William, and that they've like made her body smaller, that's why the zip doesn't line up, and they've superimposed her face from her Vogue cover a few years ago.
Yes, have I read them all? Yes. Yeah, those aren't her legs.
Every single TikTok, I'm like obsessed with them. But I'm like, they are her legs. She's worn those shoes before. They're a pair of Chloe boots. We've seen her in them. Like, they're her legs.
we love to like see these things though, and we're like, oh, maybe.
I love there is the person who's talking about the Vogue cover, and it's a TikTok that's gone quite viral, and she is presenting it entirely as fact. And I'm like, nothing you're saying is a fact. You are entirely speculative. And I look, people are now like sharing it. This is where social media does become quite dangerous, and where, and high horse journalism is incredibly important, because we know where to differentiate between opinion, what is alleged and what is fact. Yeah. And this person is just like sitting there presenting, like, we've had quite a few TED Talks, but her TED Talk on Kate, and she just sits there. None of it is alleged. Everything is, this is this photo they've taken. This is my expert opinion. They've taken this photo from here. I mean, I'm going to say that the hair's different. In one photo, she has a middle parting. In the other, she has a side parting. Would they have used wrong hair? No. Come on. Wake up.
And it is quite funny, but also, yeah, it does give more and more weight to real journalism at The National.
Oh, what a lovely way to end.
Thank you so much for joining us at The Truth here at The National.
Thank you very much for joining us for The Truth. If you like this episode, please like and subscribe on your choice of podcasting app. And don't forget to tell all your friends and family. Bye.
Bye.